Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope you're all doing well out there. We got a great show for you today. A lot going on in the light heavyweight division, and we need to spotlight it, of course, on Saturday. Over here stateside, Sunday in Australia, the UFC Perth main event. Carlos Ahlberg and Dominic Reyes fighting for a high place in contention in this division leads perfectly into next week's UFC 320 fight card, where, of course, in the main event, Magomed Ankalaev and Alex Pereira will rematch for the belt, and then the feature bout on that card, former champion Jiří Prochazka facing off against Khalil Rountree Jr. This next two events going to shape a lot about the future of this weight class. Of course, it's going to depend a lot on who wins, who loses, how the matchups get shaked going forward. But this is an important time for the division. And of course, no better man to help break it all down than the former 205-pound champion himself, the UFC Hall of Famer, UFC analyst, legend of the game, and man who was the very first guest on the Bonfire Podcast almost exactly a year ago. Wow, we've almost hit a year of this program here. It is Sugar Rashad Evans. Love to have his insights always, one of the great minds of the game, and very curious to see how he breaks down all these fights and how the division's going to move forward. So that is the crux of today's show. It is a 205-pound bonanza, and we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Rashad Evans. We're back here on the Bonfire Podcast with the man who was the very first guest on the show almost a year ago, Rashad. You're back. I hope we have the platform that's worthy of your presence now. I appreciate you, I guess, being the first man to come on here and help me build it to where we are now. It's been growing rapidly.
That's amazing to hear, and I'm glad I got to be the first, but more importantly, I'm glad to be back.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. And such a great time, as I was saying in the intro, like so much going on in the light heavyweight division right now. I thought it would be great to kind of get some of your insights. But first, Rashad, I don't know if you know, this week is the 19-year anniversary of a pretty big win of yours back at UFC 63. I think it was the first official knockout on your record against Jason Lambert. You'd had some TKOs, but this was the first officially recorded KO. Yeah. What do you remember about that night back in 2006 at UFC 63?
Man, I remember, going into that fight, people really doubted my ability to finish a fight. And, I've had some close fights up until then. Everybody would say I only can eke out a victory. So I really was going to that fight with something to prove. And, you know, Jason Lambert made it interesting for me because he was talking some trash. So it made it, very interesting and fun at the same time. But I went out there and I performed well. It was my first UFC pay-per-view event, and I won. I had a finish I wanted, and it was amazing.
Yeah, did finishing that fight with the knockout, I mean, the next fight after that was still one of the greatest knockouts in UFC history against Sean Salmon. Like, did that parlay into it, knocking out Lambert like that, knowing that you can finish the fights that way?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those things, like, if you're a wrestler and you ever grinded out a few fights, you realize once you had a few knockouts, like, I'm making this way harder than I have to make it. You know what I'm saying? So once you get that first little taste of a knockout, you're just like, yo, this is what I want every single time. I want to be able to go in there and get out and make some extra cash on top of it.
Yeah. And another little thing I wanted to hit on you before we get into these fights coming up. I always feel like we can come to you, Rashad, for like a level-headed John Jones take and approach. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you know all the stuff going on with the White House. He really wants to be on that card. Dana White seems kind of reluctant given everything that happened with the Tom Aspinall fight and, you know, maybe just his general track record of reliability. What do you think? Like, I'm sure you would love this for John, kind of being a supporter of his, but what do you think? Is there a way that he can convince Dana and the brass to make this happen for him?
Well, I mean, having John Jones on a card, you know, you want to be able to have an American on there who's going to be able to go out there with the big name and win the fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not, like, in America right now, we don't have any champions right now. We don't really have any champions that's out there that's going to be a for sure lock like John Jones. So, I mean, you know, it'd be good to have him out there. And here's the thing, you know, John Jones, he's the man, right? He's the man. Like, you got to be able to see John Jones and be able to understand you're going to get the viewership you put him on the card. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah, do you think, what do you think? Do you think he'll manage to change their minds? We still got a lot of time. Dana said they're not going to start really building things till February. What does your gut say? Do we see him fight at the White House?
Yeah, but you got to make him beg a little bit, though. You got to make him beg. Just you got to make him beg a little bit, so that way you know that he's buying all the way in. You know what I'm saying? Like you got to make him beg, make him plead his case, and that way you get him to totally buy in. So then that way there's gonna be none of those antics, and you know that he's gonna be showing up to practice, showing up to try to make sure he's the best that he can be for that fight.
Yeah, and I guess last thing on this, there was that big price tag seemingly attached to the Tom Aspinall fight. You know, the big rumor out there is the 30 million, and it seemingly like they got it for him, and then maybe, you know, like he, after agreeing to the fight, maybe kind of walked it back a bit. Do you think that number will still be on the table for them, or is that going to be something they're going to have to figure out too?
I don't think it's going to be for that price. I feel like, yeah, you know, that was a that was kind of a once in a lifetime type of situation at that price. I feel the fact that he's trying to campaign to get on a card so hard is a big reason why he probably won't get that fight. But I mean, is he gonna fight Tom Aspinall if he does fight at the White House?
I would assume that would be the fight to make, unless Tom Aspinall loses to Ciryl Gane, of course.
Well, you know what? Take back my comment about it being a lock. If you have John Jones fight on the card, listen. I mean, look. John Jones is good, of course. We all know that, but we know that boy Tom Aspinall is chomping at the bit, and if you know that right there will be a fight to make. So, you know, and here's another thing too. It's like when you've accomplished so much, and you accomplish as much as John Jones in the sport, you need a little extra caveat to kind of make you want to go out there and compete on the stage, because, you know, he's defeated dangerous foe after foe his whole entire career ever since he's, you know, came on the level. And now at this point, you know, fighting Tom Aspinall, it's a very interesting fight. People want to see it. But at the same time, if you're John Jones and you've had these kind of fights, it don't really tickle your fancy. But then you put it at the White House, now we talking a little bit of something else. So,
yeah, that seems to have his full motivation. Like you said, you know, this whole element of no male American champions right now. You know, even Daniel Cormier is stumping for him to get there. So I think that tells you, like, you know, that the patriotism is even overshadowing some personal feelings here. But kind of it parlays perfectly into it. I mean, I just spoke to Corey Sandhagen earlier today. He said, you know, he wants to fight on that card and he's going to be the American champion after he defeats Merab, and leads us perfectly into this weekend's co-main event at UFC Perth, or main event. And Dominic Reyes, who I spoke to earlier in the week as well, thinks he's going to win this fight against Carlos Alberg and then, you know, take a little time off to have his baby in December and then hopefully fight for the belt at the White House in June. So there's some guys that are close there, but yeah. I don't know. I guess let's start with Dominic versus Carlos Alberg. I mean, Dominic's resurgence has been incredible. Like, yeah, not many guys go from a 3-fight losing streak, really bad knockouts, to being able to climb back to title contention. It's one of the hardest things you can do in the sport, I feel like. Have you been impressed and, you know, admired what he's been able to do here, just even getting back to a fight like this?
I've been very impressed with Dominic Reyes. You know, I had a chance to talk to Dominic Reyes when he's, you know, kind of making that climb back, and just to see his mindset shift and just the beliefs start to come back in himself. You know, his first fight, when he kind of got off the lam, he kind of was just, you know, like, yeah, you know, I can do it. But then each and every single time he's been rising to the occasion, now he's really stepping into that belief of knowing that he can do it. And now that the questions that he even had in himself about being able to take a punch and, you know, the trauma that he received in the cage, he's kind of rewritten that, and now he's kind of refocused himself, and he's corrected the issue that has led to him, in my opinion, of him getting knocked out. You know, whenever I've seen Dominic Reyes get knocked out in the past, is he would lead with his body rather than his hands, and leading with his body, you know, he found himself at the end of a punch. So once he started to correct that and really started to get that belief back in himself, then, I mean, he realized that he still had a lot of tread left on his tires, and he's starting to realize that, wait a minute, I'm ready. Like, my past failures and the setbacks have really gotten me ready for this moment. And that's what it is for an athlete sometimes. Sometimes you got to be in that valley, and you got to just you got to ride that valley out for a while before you start to, you know, come out on the other end, but come out on the other end with all the improvements and the mindset that you gone through that valley with. And it only fortifies that hunger.
Yeah. It's been really impressive just hearing him describe everything. And he even says now, like, he thinks if he won the John Jones fight as he feels he should have, like, that would have maybe been a really bad thing for him. He thinks he was, like, going down some incorrect paths and all this stuff kind of led him to where he is. But yeah, it's just tough, man. Like, you, those knockouts don't go away, right? The damage, like, you imagine the so, like, that's the tough part. And Carlos Ahlberg is a scary guy on the feet too. Have you been fully convinced by him as, like, a top level contender during this 8-fight winning streak, or do you still feel like you need to see more out of Carlos Ahlberg?
Nah, I'm convinced. You know, it was like 2 fights ago where I'm just like, I was like, oh wow, he's really got something special. You know, I watched him, you know, kind of grow through the rankings and kind of find his way through. But in the last couple of fights, I've been really impressed with him. And it's more of what I was saying about with Dominic Reyes. It's when you see that confidence really start to kick in. And, you know, with Ahlberg, you know, he hasn't had the setbacks as a Dominic Reyes. So for him, you know, that's all he knows, really. You know what I'm saying? That's all he knows. And that's a dangerous place to be and compete against. When a guy doesn't know that they could lose like that, and they have that belief in their striking, they got belief in their camp, and they got belief in their training partners, and know that, you know what? I'm not going to face anybody as tough as Israel or Dan Hooker or, you know, some of the stallions in his camp that he's, you know, he sharpens his iron with. And, you know, that's just the guys that we know. But what that camp has done has bred a mindset and has bred an expectation and has bred so many up and coming fighters that we don't even know about that go in there and push Ahlberg to be, you know, the fighter that we've seen out there in the octagon.
That's such an interesting element of just this whole fight game, right? Like the one side of the coin of what you said there, like Dominic, who's been through all the shit and like has experienced it, the tough fights, the 5 rounders, and you have the knowledge of that heartbreak and, you know, the struggles, but then you have someone who has not gone through that, who, like you said, has all the confidence. Like what's the better side of the coin to be on, do you think, in a fight like this?
You know, I think it's Ahlberg, to be honest, because, you don't know what you don't know. And in a fight like this, you got to be willing to take the risks. The guys who's willing to take the most risks, the guys who's willing to lay it all out in there on the line, you know, is somebody that hasn't been scarred out there. You know, it's somebody who just doesn't know they could fail. And those are the guys that during the fight, if you're competing against a guy like that, you got to do something to kind of bring some kind of doubt in them. So you could give them a little bit of pause, but that's something you got to do while you're out there, and you have to gain that throughout the fight. So it's a different mindset because you're going in there already knowing the other side of what you're up against and those bad nights, in those traumatizing situations where, you know, you have to wake up and a referee has filling you in on what happened.
Yeah, it's makes it such an interesting matchup. Like you said, we got number 3 versus number 7 here. So I don't know. Both guys feel pretty confident that they're going to be at a title shot or close to it. For Ahlberg, 8 straight wins, as I said. Only one person has had a longer streak than 9, and that was John Jones at 13 straight. Ankalaev was at 9. So, like, it would be unprecedented for this division if Ahlberg does not get a title shot with a win here.
Yeah, I think you know, This is that moment to get one, right? You know, ultimately speaking, we do want to see an exciting fight to get the fans excited to see Ahlberg in a title contention situation. But I mean, I feel, you know, being a main event, being in Perth, and I mean, the stage is quite set for him to say, look, I'm next in line. And, you know, this is his moment. He's watched his teammates have this moment time and time again. And the first time is when it's your moment to do it, it's something so special, and it's something that, you know, it gives you an extra push to just go crazy.
Right now, my bookie has the odds Carlos Ahlberg -265, Dominic Reyes +200. Does that feel appropriate to you, or too big of a favorite for Ahlberg?
It seems like it's too big of a favorite for Ahlberg. I mean, you know, Ahlberg is great, but I feel like they're very comparable in a lot of ways, and I'm and I don't, and I'm not seeing the pulled away in that way, in the ways that they're compliments. You know what I'm saying? I'm not seeing the distance in their skill level to be that pull away. If anything, the pull away is more than anything is just the durability aspect of it, right? You know, because there's still those kind of questions that, yeah, we've seen Dominic Reyes go out there and we've seen him, you know, kind of turn things around, but we haven't seen him with an up and coming guy who's a great, you know, great stand up and shines in the very department in which Dominic Reyes is going to have to shine in if he's going to get his hand raised. You know, we're not going to see Dominic Reyes go out there and take some shots and grind out a win. You know, if he's going to win this fight, it's going to be on the feet. And the odds makers, like, we just don't see him being able to take those shots from Albert.
Yeah, that feels like the biggest question of this fight. So we'll see how that goes. And yeah, it does feel like a four-man race for the next title shot. That obviously leads into the featured bout at UFC 320. I know both Jiří Procházka and Khalil Roundtree want that belt real bad, want another shot. They've both had their opportunities, but with it being, like, you know, right on the same card as the title fight, it feels like maybe they're slightly ahead of this one, but yeah, it always depends on performances when it comes to this stuff, right? Like, if someone gets a lackluster decision, the other person gets a first-round knockout, it kind of sways it in their direction, so it makes it kind of tricky to determine who.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's all about the way you're making people feel. I mean, let's be honest, you know, as much as this fight is about, you know, the everyone rising to the rank that deserves to be in a position they want to be in based on the work that they put in, there's a big social component to it as well. You know, that's what makes UFC what it is. The fans get what they want for the most part, you know, and, you know, when you go out there and you have a big win and you have that hype, you can leapfrog somebody in a minute, especially if it's a lackluster performance. Mm-hmm.
As we get into UFC 320, I have a hard time seeing Procházka versus Roundtree being anything but a crazy fight. I mean, if you had to pick one of the two that might lay an egg, I would not put my money on it being this one, just purely because of Jiří Procházka's presence. I mean, the dude's never been in a bad fight in his life. So I don't know, like, this one's chaos. I feel like it's kind of hard to break down. My biggest thing is, like, we know Jiří likes to get really nasty and kind of dirty in there. I think Khalil would prefer to have a more technical fight. We know he can, you know, have that when he needs to. We saw it with Alex Pereira. But I don't know, like, Jiří does what he does, seemingly no matter who's across from him. Does that make for a bad night for Khalil, or do you think his more technical approach is the answer?
You know, I think the fact that Khalil is so technical and so grounded in his technicality, meaning the fact that he's proficient in his technicality, where he's, you know, he can throw the jab and he can throw the low leg kick and he can throw it ad nauseum, where it kind of is boring, but he's chipping away. He's chipping away. And then when he finds an opportunity, he'll find a way to get finished. He's not, I don't see him getting pulled into the wildness of what Procházka brings, because Procházka makes you fight from that emotional place. He turns it actually into a fight. And by that, I mean, you know, there's a big technical aspect and X's and O's and what you're doing, the game plan in the fight. But then sometimes you see fights where game plans are out the window and things get kind of wild, and you're swinging from your hips and not throwing it with the proper technique, but you're doing it because you're doing it out of emotion. Procházka has the ability to make you fight with that emotion. Khalil is just calm and calculated. I have a really hard time to see him getting pulled out of his element. You know, I feel like if anything, because of his technicality, he'll pull more Procházka in that camp. And I feel like Procházka is honestly looking to be a little bit more technical, because if I'm Procházka's coach, I think he kind of wastes a lot of energy with sloppy technique a little bit, you know? Sometimes it does catch people off guard, and he does have that X factor with that wildness. But at the same time, I think he's good enough technically tighten it up a bit and still be as dynamic as he is.
And do you think part of that tightening up needs to be to protect the legs from the leg kicks? I mean, Khalil is devastating at those. We've seen Jiří take them a lot, and, you know, he's pushed through them. We saw what happened with Rakic, but, like, at some point you don't want to just rely on your toughness when you're dealing with a kicker like Khalil.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about with Prochaska. You know, he's gonna have to just be, because he knows how to check the legs. But what gets him not doing it is the fact that he gets into the fight so much where he's fighting from his heart. And yeah, it's great to fight from your heart, but you also got to remember, you know what I'm saying? You got to be able to keep your tools and your ability to carry out the rest of the fight by being smart about the damage that you're taking along the way. You're not going to be able to exact your game plan if you can't even walk by the end of the first round. So he's got to be a lot smarter about that. And being smarter doesn't mean that he needs to not fight like himself. It's just that he needs to understand that part of his game plan needs to be, we're going to tighten it up for a bit, and we're going to find our spots to fight the way and pull him in our kind of style of fights. But when it's early out, let's not take a lot of leg kicks. Let's not give him any of those free shots. And if he's kicking our leg, let's make him pay for it. Let's not let him make him be pretty, you know? Get him a little dirty. And that's what, and to my point, that's what Pereira had to do when he fought Khalil. He had to get a little bit dirty in order to really, you know, land some of those shots on Khalil, who was technically running away with the first couple of rounds when they fought.
Do you think it would benefit Yuri to try to grapple at all in this fight?
I think it will, in a sense where, you know, when I say grapple, I mean with the grappling pressure. So he can throw kick, punch, land in a clinch, get him against the wall. A lot of people try to focus so much on getting the guy to the ground, but you have to understand getting the guy against the cage and making him fight against the cage is just as good sometimes as making the guy fight off the ground, because what you're doing is you're taking a guy who's a striker and used to having, you know, his body feel a certain kind of way when he struggled, but now you're making him hold and push and pull, and the lactic acid in the muscles build up differently. So then when you strike out in the open, now you're dealing with a different striker, because now his arms are filled with blood and now he's shaking them out, and he loses a bit of that snap and quickness.
Yep, I love that. That's great insight from the technical side. This is going to be such a good fight, man. I mean, you could probably pencil these two dudes in for a fight of the night unless someone catches them each other pretty early on and it's like a first-round finish or something. But I don't know, do you see this being like a 15-minute war? These guys are both pretty damn durable, as we've seen.
I think it's going to be a 15-minute fight, man. I feel like, you know, with the patient style that Khalil has displayed sometimes, you know, he's gonna chip away, and he's gonna take his time to wear out of Prochaska, but Prochaska's durability is not gonna allow it to happen. And I don't see Khalil being able to land that one shot that's gonna get him out of here. I mean, I don't see Khalil being open enough for Prochaska to land that shot as well. So I think it's gonna go 15 minutes.
Okay, yeah, and the odds on that one from my bookie, Roundtree +150 and Prochaska -200. Does that seem a little more appropriate to you?
Yeah, that seems appropriate for sure.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun one. For Yuri, just last thing on him. I mean, he's in this weird spot where, you know, had two losses to the former champion in Pereira. It's always tough to get back there. I think the best thing that could have happened to him in his title hopes was Ankalaev winning, and probably Ankalaev winning again. Is that what you're hoping if you're him, or are you like, damn, those losses to Pereira like hurt me to my core so badly. I want him to have the belt and, you know, do whatever I have to, even if I have to win more fights after this to get another title shot.
You know, I think that he would probably prefer to fight Ankalaev, but I feel also there's a side of him that seen how Ankalaev won, and now he's realizing the ways in which he could have won, right? So he's kind of gained confidence off of that, being like, wait a minute, he's just a man. I know what I've done wrong. And, you know, when I watched that fight the two times, it was almost like the second time around you've seen Prochaska mentally not in the same strong mindset that we've seen him in before. You know, Prochaska is... I love this guy because of the fact that he's so out there sometimes, right? But there's a Bushido, there is a very martial way about him. And when he fought him the last time, he seemed to almost kind of give in to, you know, Pereira's way that he approached the fight and you know felt as if like, you know, he does things that are not really, he shouldn't do as far as using the tribe and stuff like that. I mean, like those kind of things were playing into his mind. And it was like, I mean, Prochaska, you go and you sit in the darkness and things like that. You have your own unorthodox ways. So it just kind of seemed to me that mentally he just wasn't as strong as I envisioned him being in his previous fight. So I feel like now after going through what he's gone through and kind of reassessing himself as a competitor, I feel like he's in a stronger place mentally.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that second fight was not ideal for anyone. It was like, you know, 3 weeks notice after Conor McGregor pulled out of UFC 303. Yeah. So it was like very much cobbled together. And yeah, when you're accusing the opponent of using like black magic and stuff to get ready for the fight, it's maybe not going to be your night.
Especially when you're kind of weird yourself. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, I feel like to make that accusation, you maybe have to be a little weird yourself. Like, I don't know, it all kind of ties together, right? So maybe, I don't know, but it's always great to see Yuri. I'm curious to hear what he has to say this fight week. But yeah, such good positions, and we'll go into the main event now, man. It's a very compelling fight. I know Chael Sonnen is out there being like, no one wanted this fight the first time, no one asked for it the second time, but here we are. I don't know, like, I feel like you kind of had to do this though. Like, you thought this was pretty obvious matchmaking to do after Ankalaev won earlier this year, or did any part of you want them to go in a different direction, like Pereira moving to heavyweight?
Nah, I felt like this is the direction to go. I mean, you know, you have a guy like Pereira who's been Johnny on the spot. I mean, the time that he's stepped up for the organization and done what he's done, and just the run that he's been on, you know, the legacy and greatness that he's already shown. I felt like it was kind of owed to him, you know. In that fight with Ankalaev, you know, it was a fight that Ankalaev definitely clearly won, but I felt as if like, you know, I felt like it could have been. I wanted to see Pereira again, because what he did was he answered the question with the grappling, right? And now that we've seen him answer the question with the grappling and be, you know, so much better than we thought he would be in the grappling scenarios, now I want to see, now that he knows that he can stop him, let's fight again, and let's see him not so worried about just stopping a takedown and now starting to do what he does. Now that he has a confidence that he can stop him strike with the takedown, now let's see him open up with the strikes and see what kind of fight that brings about, you know, because, you know, in that fight, he was just a day late and a dollar short. And it was just mainly because he was so worried about the takedown, and he got beat on the feet because he was so worried about getting taken down.
Mm-hmm. Which is so interesting too, because like, I know everyone loves to paint Magomed Ankalaev as some like, you know, blanket grappler. Like, he's not really that. He hasn't landed a takedown in like half his fights. He's won half his UFC fights by knockout. I think his takedown percentage is like in the 20%, 23%. So he's not this guy who's just shooting and getting you down every time. But you never know when that can come out like a little more in full. What's the fine line you have to walk of, like you said, he was maybe thinking about it too much. And what if you go into this fight not thinking about it enough, and then Ankalaev is grappling more? That's the game.
Right. Yeah. You know, here's the thing though. I feel like being somebody who was primarily a wrestling based fighter, then, you know, I would strike. There's a certain kind of conditioning that you need to be able to know you can do, like be able to know you can hit. Like, it's one thing to do it in training, but it's a fight rhythm. Like, I know that I can take somebody down a certain amount of times in a fight, and I'm going to reach a point where I get really tired, and I got to be okay with that feeling. Because if you're not okay with that feeling, there's almost kind of a panic that happens when he's like, yo, I'm tired, and he's back up on his feet, and now he's striking, and I don't feel so fresh. So I may feel he has a slight advantage with the striking. So then you kind of panic wrestle, and then you find yourself in bad situations, right? And I say that to say this. Is Ankalaev's rest, like, has he built up that confidence in his wrestling during a competition in order to truly impose with just the wrestling? And I didn't see that in his last fight, even though he did try to take down Pereira a lot. But I see him kind of ease off the brakes a little bit and realize, yo, I'm getting kind of tired with this wrestling. let me stand up and strike a little bit more. But by that time, he was able to stand up and hold his own and even win in that department because he already put so much work in the attempts that he had Pereira in the proverbial hole, just, you know, trying to work out for the takedowns.
I'm really curious to see what Ankalaev's approach here is going to be, because it's one thing when you're the guy who's on the 10-fight winning streak and everyone knows you deserve the title shot, but the UFC brass are like not loving your style or your personality, yeah, and you have to like go into a fight like Rakic and be like, I promise Dana White I won't shoot a single takedown, and like you win the fight, but now he's got everything he wants, he's the champion, he has the belt, and now it's on him to defend it. I'm curious to see how that impacts his approach to these fights, if he's gonna do anything different now and be like, I don't really give a crap what any of you guys say because I'm the champion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Teddy Atlas said, you know, you get 30% better once you become champion. So, you know, Pereira has to deal with that aspect. So he's gonna be a lot better than we've seen when he was a title contender. But I feel like this fight is on Pereira to do a little something different. You know, he's got to be able to truly open up his game to the point where he's not so worried about getting takedown. I feel like. When you're somebody who's in a situation like Pereira, when you're going against a guy who's gotten so much more experience with the wrestling, I feel your focus shouldn't be on takedown defense as it should be on getting up. Because as somebody who used to take people down, it always made me more tired when I had to hold them down and they were able to get back up. When I fought Michael Bisping, I was able to take him down, but the sucker kept getting up so much, I started policing myself, like, yo, I don't know if I have the energy to take him down because he get back up and then I got to stand up and strike with him and now I'm even more tired. You know what I'm saying? So if he focused more on just getting up, he has a basic understanding of how to prevent a takedown, but just getting back up to your feet and using a lot of energy to strike and use your fakes and feints. Use that heavy jab, get on that low kick, all that kind of stuff. That's what he really needs to be on.
Yeah, and sidebar going off that, just since you mentioned that, Bisping, I always thought was one of the best at getting up off his back. Like maybe the wrestling on the initial resistance wasn't always there. But do you feel like, you know, since those years to now, that's one of the things about MMA that's improved the most? People learning how to get up, use the wall, like scoot over, all those type of things. Is that where we've seen like one of the biggest evolution points?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, to have MMA wrestling defense nowadays is truly about your ability to get up and continue to rinse and repeat and do that over and over again, getting to the wall, getting to those underhooks and understanding that's where the fight is. I have to get to those underhooks. That's where the fight is. Once I have the underhook, now I'm able to start using my body to get back to my feet. But it was understanding where the fight is. And once guys understood where the fight is, now it's a lot different being a grappler wrestler to be able to hold somebody down. And listen, the Dagestanis and those guys, they got it figured out as far as the way they're able to do it. But even when you see them in there with the guys that have really good understanding of how to get back up to the feet, you see them like, yo, this is a lot harder. You know, it's not the same game anymore.
Mm-hmm. Love that insight. You mentioned that you think Alex needs to do something different for this rematch. He is at least in the lead up. I don't know if you saw this on Tuesday night. Apparently there was like a near encounter between Ankalaev and Pereira at the UFC Performance Institute. They didn't actually see each other, but Alex claims the UFC staff hid Ankalaev in a little room. And then this was his quote. He's a chump. What kind of champion is that man? A shit champion. I know that's harsh, but he's a shitty champion, man. A guy like that, you know what? Not because of what he says, but hiding in a room today. He showed he's a coward. We'll see. He's hiding now. We'll be in the cage, locked in there, unless he jumps the fence. He's a shitty champion, this guy. Never heard Alex talk like that about any of his opponents.
I love that, Jama. I love that. You know, I've got a chance to see Alex a few times just here and there, and I really like Alex as a person, and I like the fact that, you know, he's kind of settled down his life a bit, just kind of really got dialed in. You know, sometimes success can make you be your own worst enemy, just being so spread out, going here, going there, and you overbook your schedule. And before you know it, you're doing all the other things more than you are actually doing the thing that, you know, that you're making your money from. So I'm glad that he's kind of reconnected to that savage part of himself, because listen, this isn't a nice contest. Yeah, it's great. You can have respect for your opponent, but there has to be that part of you that is just an asshole, to say the least. You know what I'm saying? You gotta be a savage in there. And for him to tap back into that savagery, he's going to need that. He's going to need that. So I'm glad that he's feeling that way, and I'm glad that he's not liking him. Shake hands and be friends after the competition.
Yeah, I hope we get that same energy carrying over into fight week. Like, this fight needs that. I know Ankalaev is more aggressive on the Twitter machine than he is when the microphone is in front of him, you know, saying he's going to send Alex back to the tire shop for good after this and stuff. But yeah. I want to see some of that heat when they're in person, because I do think, like, this is a great fight. I think it's just missing that little edge to it.
Well, you know what? I mean, honestly speaking, for as great as, you know, Alex has been doing and, you know, been going in the UFC, I feel like this is a big fight for him, you know, because if he doesn't win this fight, then, you know, his next step, I mean, he's going to probably have to leave light heavyweight and go up to heavyweight. You know what I mean? That would be probably the smartest move for him, because I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that he can't be Ankalaev, but just kind of two in the row with him, it'd be a tough one to go, you know, and especially at the age he's at right now, right? You don't want to, you know, give anybody their eulogy or something like that when they still are a great performer. But at the same time, if he doesn't win this fight, it kind of like, all right, what are we planning on doing?
Totally agree. There's a lot of pressure on him, and you know, looking at the odds here, +150 underdog, Megan Wagon Ankalaev -200. Like, Alex Pereira could win this fight. He's freaking Alex Pereira. He can knock you out. We've seen Ankalaev take leg damage in there. This guy's one of the best kickers. So, like, I'm not ruling it out, but I totally agree. And I think if, depending how he loses too, like, if Ankalaev does have a lot of grappling success or he gets knocked out really bad, like, that doesn't make me feel good about Pereira going up to heavyweight, where, like, there's some bigger guys, some with good grappling and more power. So, yeah, you're in a tough spot here if you lose this one. Everyone's just saying, like, he'll just go to heavyweight. I'm like, that doesn't feel like it's instant success.
I know. I mean, listen, heavyweight is no joke either. Like, heavyweight is no joke. So, yeah, it's not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, and I mean, we're obviously talking about the top of the tier. Like, could he get into a striking fight with Derek Lewis and maybe knock him out? Like, sure, but right. We're talking about Tom Aspinall, things like that. Those seem like kind of scary matchups. So I don't know. What do you think? We still have a little over a week till this fight, so I'll give you the freedom to maybe change your pick as things evolve. But sitting here right now, how do you feel? Who leaves with that belt?
You know, I'm gonna go with Pereira, man. I'm gonna go with Alex Pereira. You know, I feel like I feel he's gonna be able to make the adjustments. You know, and I got really a lot of faith in his team. You know, I think Teixeira and what's the bigger coach name?
Paulinho.
I feel like they're very good at making the kind of adjustments that they need to. And Alex, when I seen him last, you know, he seemed to really be locked in and really dialed into doing what he needs to do in camp without the distractions, and really just making sure that he gets the training parties he need to get, and just really just, you know, fight from that place that he knows that if he fights from there, he's going to win.
Yeah. And there's some legacy attached here too. I mean, looking through real quick, we have never had, besides John Jones, kind of his stuff was weird, like, two-time light heavyweight champion, someone who's won it. And I guess more fairly, John Jones did not do this. He was stripped. Someone who's got that belt, lost it, and then won it back, at least in this decade. We had Randy Couture back in the day, but that was a long time ago. So that shows a lot. That's like one of the hardest things to do in the sport, right? Get that belt back after losing it.
It really is. And, you know, we talked a lot about the wrestling of Ankalaev and what he could do. But when I really think about how he won that fight the last time, it was off the jab. That jab was really something that gave Alex a lot of problems. He was a lot faster than I thought he was going to be. And I'm sure he was a lot faster than Alex thought he's going to be. So Alex going to really have to make the adjustments on the feet as well. We can talk about wrestling all day, but you know, Uncle Live brought a well-rounded fight last time.
Yeah. And if he goes in there and he does everything he says he's going to do and outstrikes him again or knocks him out or something, that's going to be a huge feather in his cap. So I can't wait to see this one. It's going to be good. Rashad, before I let you go, I know you said before we spoke today that you were at the gym working with some guys. Who are you working with right now? What's going on with you?
You know, I have my godson, Devin Smith. He has a fight coming up in Texas. I forget the organization he's fighting for, but I mean, it's one fight that he has before he springboard and get a chance to fight for the UFC, you know, potentially, hopefully speaking. And then I have Muhammad Usman that I'm getting ready for a fight. And he fights in Brazil, in Rio. He's fighting against Johnny Walker's brother.
Walker. So yeah, training some leg lock defense or what?
All day, leg locking it up. But you know, Mo's really just you know, he's had a great camp. He's strong as hell, and he's, you know, he's feeling himself from the last fight, and he's kind of growing in confidence and really understanding where he needs to fight from. So, you know, camp has been going pretty good, and we've been, you know, adding a few new things to the arsenal, working with Phil Nurse and, you know, just kind of just opening things up a little bit, but just having fun, really.
Phil Nurse is a name I haven't heard in a minute. How's he?
Yeah. Phil Nurse, he's good, man. He's good. He came out here to South Florida and, you know, he's still training guys, still, you know, the man when it comes to game plan strategy and just, you know, being able to think outside the, you know, the box and be unorthodox and add the talents that truly translate to landing something that your opponents just don't even see coming.
Yeah, he's being up in the corner of many, many UFC title fighting legendary wins. Love that guy. And any desk analyst gigs coming up for you or nothing on the schedule right now?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be working in Rio the night that Mo's going to fight.
Double dipping,
yeah.
Yeah. Good stuff. I love that, yeah. I'm glad they got a new main event there. We had a little scare with Charles Oliveira, like, falling off, but I think he took probably the hardest fight available to him, and I'm really interested to see what happens with him and Gamrot.
I know. I'm excited. You know, Fazee was in camp with us, too, training, and it was unfortunate to see him go out, man. I mean, but you know what? You see the way Fazee trains, and you just, like, now I know why you go into every fight with a black eye. This dude is... He trains hard.
Yeah.
He trains hard. So
something he needs to reassess, though, maybe, if you're getting the same knee injury multiple times over. I know it's not all.
You know, if he's my guy, I'm going to kind of pull him back. You got to kind of pull him back a little bit and just kind of protect him from himself sometimes.
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, I hope it's a safe trip out there, Rashad, to Brazil. And yeah, I'm very curious to see that fight now with Walter Walker and Mo, because that's an odd heavyweight right there you got in terms of, like, game planning. So
It is, man.
All right. I appreciate you as always, Rashad. Make sure everyone follows this man on social media. And I'm going to take a quick break and be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Rashad for his time, to my man Kamikaze Abu Suban for producing the show as always, and it is going to be big stuff coming up here. October's huge for the sport, 2 pay-per-views for the UFC, a lot of big fights going on as well. I'm going to be headed to Las Vegas next week for UFC 320. I'm going to try to knock out a show before I take off, and then it's going to be a very, very busy week. A lot of stuff going on down there around UFC 320, both MMA and otherwise. So hope to bring you guys a lot of great content there. I guess one more programming note: on Thursday, we are going to have the first ever live chat for the Bonfire with my great colleague Farah Hanoun from MMA Junkie. We're going to take some questions, talk some news. If you're listening to this on Wednesday or Thursday morning, tune into that. I think 11 a.m. Eastern. If you're listening to this after Thursday morning, go check out the archive. It'll be on the YouTube channel for this podcast. And you can hit the live tab and we should have the replay there. So be sure to tune into that. We're growing, we're expanding here, not just the podcast, but the channel as a whole. Some good stuff going on social media as well that I'll try to share with you guys too. So thank you so much for everyone for tuning in. And until next week, I will see you back here by the Bonfire.